Good afternoon and welcome to Cape Light Compact's Focus on Energy, a monthly program designed to bring you timely information on various energy topics of interest to Cape Cod. We've used this program over the last 6 years to try to keep you up to date on the initiatives of the Cape Light Compact, which is part of the Barnstable County government. We also serve Martha's Vineyard under an agreement with Dukes County. I'm John Burns, a retired energy efficiency program planner at the Cape Light Compact, which is located in the Superior Courthouse in Barnstable. Every 6 months, electricity is repriced in the Cape Light Compact service territory. And when that happens, we use the program to revisit our power supply sources and bring our listeners up to date on what's happening in the energy market and how it affects us here on Cape Cod and the Vineyard. So I've asked a couple of guests who actually are becoming regulars on the program to come back in and talk to us about our electricity supply. Welcome, gentlemen. Thanks very much for coming in once again today. You've both been on before, and it's about every 6 months I have to get you back in here to find out what's new in the business.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks for having us, John.
Joe, let me start with you. Where does electricity come from? We're going to back up a little bit. We're going to be covering some old ground, but we get new listeners all the time. In fact, somebody may be tuning in for the very first time today. So let's do a little review of where the electricity for Cape Cod actually comes from.
Electricity in New England really is generated by several hundred generators, everything from nuclear power, hydropower, renewables, primarily fossil fuels. Natural gas in New England has increased dramatically for generation as a fuel. Our oil and coal plants have been reduced, so we're not as reliant on those as we were in the past. So there's really a mix of sources that provide electricity, and it's sort of, if you think of it as a pool, all of these sources are providing energy into a high voltage transmission system, which flows throughout New England and then gets dumped off into various substations, as you see here locally on Oak Street. There's a large substation from NSTAR. So it drops off into several hundred locations throughout New England and then goes from the substations through the lines on the street and subsequently to all of the end users, whether it's a business or resident. So it's a pooling effect. It's coordinated by a central operator in New England called ISO New England, Independent System Operator for New England, who controls and has a control of all of the flows that are required at any point in New England. And they pretty much call generators on and off on an hourly basis, depending on what the needs are of the entire region.
Okay, well, I'd like to get even a little more basic when we talk about what a generator is. For the most part, and when you talk about these various fuels, whether it be oil, coal, gas, nuclear, it's all basically really what you do is you heat water. And so you heat the water, turn it into steam, the steam turns a turbine. Turbine generates electricity. The turbine turns a generator, which generates electricity, and it all gets dumped into this centralized pool and then distributed out of all these wires. So we talk about electricity as a fuel, but really it's not. It's something that's manufactured or derived from a fuel.
Right,
so burning a fuel for the most part. Mm-hmm. You did mention renewables, so let's move on into that a little bit and say that's something that isn't necessarily a heat source. It's more of a mechanical source or a photovoltaic source, as in the case of solar energy. So what percentage of our electricity nowadays comes from these renewable sources?
We're mandated by the state of Massachusetts to have, as part of our retail supply, and this is a requirement for all retail suppliers in Massachusetts, that a certain percentage come from renewable sources. This year, 2013, the renewable portfolio standard, which is the basic requirement, is 8%, and then there are other portfolio standard requirements for hydro, small hydro, and some other alternatives that probably put you closer to 10% of the supply. Now, in reality, John, unless you're directly hooked up to that source, in the case of solar on your roof, you're not really getting solar energy, solar or wind energy.
It's all mixed.
It's all mixed into that pool. Right. And how most suppliers deal with that is they buy what's called renewable energy certificates, which has a value in the marketplace. And one certificate equals 1 megawatt hour of generation from these sources. So most retail suppliers purchase renewable energy certificates to satisfy that need versus actually going out and buying it from an energy source.
Correct. Now, does the Cape Light Compact purchase the certificate or does Con Ed Solutions?
In the past, the Cape Light Compact purchased the certificates.
Okay.
We had some very good contracts at very good prices. And the difference between what the price was under the contract versus what the state had as a price if you couldn't comply, which was like a penalty payment, mm-hmm. that savings was passed through to all consumers in our rates. Con Ed Solutions has now taken on that responsibility because of the increase in supply or requirements for that supply. Plus, we have these other alternatives now, the small hydro, the flywheel technology, and that sort of thing that are very small components, but yet still have to be complied with. So in our most recent contract, Con Edison Solutions, we felt and Con Ed felt that it was better if they controlled that aspect of it because it's part of their pricing to us.
So they've got Con Ed Solutions, and you, Sam, you can jump in here. You go out and you try to locate these sources of renewable sources because you are required to have. Is that in the contract, like 8% or 10%?
It's whatever. It increases every year, John.
Okay.
It's been going up 1% since 2009. By 2020, the requirement will be 15%.
Okay.
And then you'll have these other small components that will also be growing. So as you can see, you have this upward pressure on some of these more expensive sources.
Okay. Yeah. And the renewable sources actually tend to be more expensive for... don't they?
They do. So to jump in here, Joe mentioned the renewable energy certificates. So these renewable sources of energy sell their energy into the market the same way somebody that's generating electricity using natural gas or coal or nuclear might sell energy into the market. But then they have another thing that they can sell, which are these renewable energy certificates. So a natural gas generator can't sell a renewable energy certificate. But if I'm a wind turbine developer in Massachusetts and I'm producing electrons, I can also sell these renewable energy certificates, which suppliers such as Con Edison Solutions and any other retail supplier or utility serving retail customers is required to purchase each year a certain amount. As Joe mentioned, in 2013 it's got to be, you have to match 8% of your load with renewable energy certificates or else pay what's called an alternative compliance penalty. So those certificates that are required to purchase, to be purchased, do increase the cost to serve customers.
Do you have a feel for how much renewable energy is actually available versus how much of penalty is actually being paid? So if you can't, if you go out in the marketplace, you can't find renewable energy because there isn't enough of it, you pay a penalty. How much of it's realistically available out there?
So I'm not an expert in this area, but my sense is that there is enough of these retail or these renewable energy certificates available for almost all, if not all, of the load in Massachusetts.
Oh, okay.
And the reason I think that is because I believe the price for these certificates is slightly below that compliance cost, which suggests that they're available. Otherwise, the price people would just pay the
penalty and
correct.
Yeah. So okay, so so there is enough available. Do you have can you give me a sense of what the mix may be as far as wind, solar?
So the definition, Joe can jump in here if he knows better than I do, but there's a very strict and specific definition for what qualifies as renewable or what type of renewable energy certificates qualify for this for the renewable portfolio standard in Massachusetts. And I know biomass is a piece of it. I know
what is biomass? What's the definition?
So biomass typically is taking oftentimes trash,
okay.
converting it, and they take the gas off from, let's say, a landfill, and they're able to burn that and convert that to,
okay.
to electricity. I don't know, is wood chips?
Wood chips.
That are biomass.
Okay.
In California, it would be our agricultural waste, everything from walnut shells, you know,
okay.
Things of that
if you
sort.
Can burn it.
If you can burn it,
okay.
it's a
biomass
type plant.
Okay. All right.
And specifically in Massachusetts, we could not buy renewable energy certificates to satisfy the requirement, let's say, that were created in, let's say, Missouri.
Okay.
Because which would be cheaper. The requirement does require that those certificates come from generation source here in New England.
It does, okay. All right. So, okay, that gives us a little flavor for what goes into the mix. We did decide that natural gas, however, was now becoming the major component of fuel for our electricity source. So where are we with natural gas?
I would say natural gas is probably now well over 50% of our
okay.
generation. Everything in the last 5 to 8 years has been, all new generation in New England has been built with natural gas as the fuel to burn. A lot of reasons for that. It takes up a lot less acreage than,
mm-hmm.
say, a nuclear plant. Faster to permit. You can put more megawatts of generation on a smaller footprint. So, you know, time from permitting through to construction and online was a lot quicker. The fuel, as you know, it is a commodity, and it has varied tremendously over the years, depending on world markets, regional effects, so forth. But right now, the because of shale, the market for natural gas as a commodity, the price of it, is still relatively low compared to what it was. For instance, back in 2008, when oil was $147 a barrel, natural gas was about $15 per million BTU. Last year in 2012, it actually went under $2.
Wow.
It's now gone back up to, you know, the mid $3, almost $4. So there's been a wide variation in the price of the commodity itself. But right now, New England is very dependent on natural gas. And
okay.
there are some concerns about that, because if we have a tremendous or prolonged cold snap, you know, natural gas is also used in homes,
right.
and the consumer, the homeowner, and the businesses have the preference for that. Most of the generators do not purchase natural gas under a firm contract, so they wouldn't get it. So you could have issues in generation and have shortages of electricity in prolonged cold snaps because of these.
And so when Con Ed Solutions goes out into the marketplace to acquire, because they're required to, once they've bid on this portfolio, the Cape Light Compact's requirement, they have to deliver on that requirement no matter what the cost is out there.
Correct.
So, and you used a term that I think I'd like to explain to the audience. It was the firm contract. So with a firm contract, that means that the gas supplier, must deliver it to you. And with what's the term that they use for the interruptible?
I think that's it.
Interruptible. Okay. Yeah. So if we have one of these cold snaps that you allude to, the generation facility then gets turned off. They can't get the natural gas. What do they do in a case like that?
Maybe I can jump in here. I think
okay.
so. Today, for example, it's 8 degrees outside.
Okay.
You hear the radiator squeaking in
right.
the room. But on a day like this, there's not enough natural gas, more than likely, to meet all the needs of natural gas generators. So what happens is some more expensive fuels get called by, Joe talked about the ISO New England, and what they do is they dispatch economically the generation, and they'll bring on the cheapest generation on first and then move to the more costly generation. So a more costly form of generation today would likely be somebody burning oil. And so on a day like today, it's likely that some generators that have not been generating for most of the year would be called upon to burn their oil, generate electricity, because there might not be enough natural gas to serve the less expensive generators.
And so my understanding is that when that more expensive oil facility gets called online, that all of the pricing below that, all of the everything below that, then rises to whatever the price of oil was.
That's exactly right.
And this, you know, this is a good time for me to talk a little about why it is we are so aggressive with energy efficiency, especially on Cape Cod. We have been for quite some time. It behooves us to stay under that. We don't want to fire those oil plants up when we don't have to. So we have worked better part of 10 years, over 10 years now, implementing energy efficiency programs to avoid that very event. And that is to when we run out of the cheaper sources of energy, once we put a more expensive plant online, all of the cheaper ones go to the price, whoever the generator is, they get the price of whatever the most expensive is out there that day. So it really behooves us, everyone, to participate in the energy efficiency programs, keep our usage, our demand down to the level that doesn't cause us to bring those plants online. We will bring them online on very cold days, no doubt about that, but we want to avoid that as much as possible.
No, that's true. Just to add on to what you said, not only does reducing your electricity demand save you money directly and on your bill that you get the month that you reduce that electricity, but it's actually, you can view it as a longer term investment that keeps on returning on that investment, in that you reduce the overall demand of the system by a small incremental amount, which pays off over time in terms of, like you said, reducing the required amount of time you might have a higher cost generator online.
Exactly. And you know, when you reduce your electric bill, believe it or not, the way this works, you actually reduce your neighbor's bill at the same time because of the fact that you may not be calling a more expensive generator online. And of course, one person isn't going to do it, but you know, tell your friends. Enough of them participate in energy efficiency, and then we can keep the costs in line for all of us. And that, you know, that brings me to the next subject, and that is the price. What is happening to the price? Every 6 months, as we've talked about before on this program, every 6 months, Joe, you go out into the marketplace, you look for a supplier. It has been Con Ed Solutions, but there's a number of other companies that do bid on it. What's going on with the current six-month contract? What do we have to look forward to between now and, say, July of 2013?
Well, John, we just issued our prices for the first 6 months of 2013, and they start with the January meter read dates, whatever the meter read date is for your home or business, and ends with the July meter read dates. And for a residential customer, the first half of this year, our rate is 7.672 cents per kilowatt hour, and our rate for a small commercial or a medium and large commercial customer, all of those classes of service, are all priced at 7.689 cents per kilowatt hour. Now, these prices are an increase from what we had in the last 6 months of 2012, when our residential rate was at 6.688 and our small commercial, industrial, and medium and large commercial industrial customers were at 6.6676. So we're seeing an increase of a little less than a penny, or approximately a penny, from the same time a year ago. I'm sorry, 6 months ago when we
So what's that going to translate to on a electric bill, a residential electric bill?
For a typical residential bill, it's a few dollars a month.
Okay.
That's about it.
So can the increase in price be attributed to the cold weather? Why is it that...
Well, you did some good background questions before, but we talked about natural gas, and Joe spoke about natural gas trading at a price, you know, between $3 and $4 per million BTU. So that's the price that natural gas can be purchased at a wholesale trading point. There's another component of natural gas, or the cost of natural gas, that we have to talk about, especially when we're talking about getting natural gas to New England, and that's the cost to deliver it into New England. And that cost has gone up significantly over the past 6 months, primarily due to some pipeline constraints or some perceived pipeline constraints. And while the fuel has gone up a little bit, the major reason prices have gone up is really concern over getting natural gas into New England this winter. And that view has changed from today, let's say, versus where it was 6 to 9 months ago.
What drives the cost? I mean, the pipe, is it increased demand? Is it, don't we have enough pipeline? Do we need more pipeline? What would moderate that price?
Well, believe it or not,
because it's not the cost of the gas itself, right? It's really...
Correct. It did go up a little bit, but the bigger piece, it really is basis or the cost to transport natural gas into the region. So I'm not by any stretch of the imagination, expert on natural gas basis, but it is traded in a market, much like the fuel itself is, and somebody owns the rights to transport gas, and they can sell it, they can ask a price, and a buyer can choose to buy or not buy it at that price. And so the short answer to the question of why that price went up is because there was enough demand and scarce enough supply where
bid up the capacity
exactly.
Price.
So, and what people would generally tell you is it's, you know, last winter was a relatively mild winter. It seems like every winter, you know, people think that we're not going to have any cold weather, and then we get cold weather and prices tend to run up. The short answer is there's all sorts of factors, but really it's because somebody was willing, was able to sell it for a lot more than they could last winter.
And you have to anticipate that about 6 months out.
Right. So when we agree on a price, we have to go out and make arrangements in the marketplace so that we can purchase the electricity at the price that we're able to sell it at. So we have to go out and make arrangements with wholesale suppliers that no matter what happens, even if a cold day like this happens and the price of electricity goes to 15 cents or 20 cents, we're not going to pass that price on to consumers. You know, we're going to hold our price the way it is.
I see. And so for the next 6 months, we're going to be looking at slightly increased electric bills based on our historical usage. If you use 600 kilowatt hours last year and you use 600 kilowatt hours this year, you're probably looking at a $5 or $6 increase on your overall electric bill. And that's, you know, that's how the market works, all right. I would like to talk a little bit about some of the other offers that are out there, because basically the Cape Light Compact acts as a kind of a backstop for the competitive marketplace. Joe, a little history, give us a little quick history on the competitive marketplace for electricity and what other offers people might be exposed to, what they may be looking at.
Okay. Well, the market in Massachusetts was really deregulated by law in 1997. The markets fully opened in March of 2005. We were providing a competitive supply to a small group of customers of about 42 to 50,000 customers in as early as 2002. So we had some very good prices then. When the market fully opened in March of 2005, we took all customers on Cape Cod and Martha's Vineyard because we're an opt-out aggregator, a municipal aggregator, which was allowed under the law in 1997.
Just quickly, what does that mean?
That means if you move to the Cape from some mm-hmm. other location and you call NSTAR and say, hey, I just purchased a home and I'm closing on Monday, or I'm moving into an apartment on Monday, I need to have the electricity account changed to my name, you automatically come onto the Cape Light Compact supply. The delivery of that electricity is still with NSTAR. You'll
okay.
still get your bill with NSTAR.
Poles and wires are NSTAR.
Poles and wires are still regulated.
Electrons are Cape Light Compact.
Cape Light Compact. Okay. So We've been doing this and since June 2002, but for technical purposes, when the market opened up in March of 2005. And we've offered a fixed price every 6 months. In many instances, our price has been below NSTARS, which is the basic service provider. But as the market opens up, and which is a great thing, and that's what competitive markets are all about, consumers have choice. They have the Cape Light Compact, you have your NSTAR basic service, and you have other suppliers that come into the marketplace with offers. We recently saw some offers come in from various companies that gave us a little bit of concern. So I did a short video on our website, www.capelightcompact.org, to really try to advise consumers what to do if you receive an offer in the mail, or if you receive a phone call from a competitive supplier offering you a price. Usually what you have to be concerned about and make sure is covered is that the price they're offering you is a fixed price.
Okay. Not just a 1 or 2 month teaser rate.
Not just a 1 or 2 or 3 month teaser rate.
Right.
Make sure that that fixed price does not include any ability for the supplier to pass through any additional costs, which could come up through regulatory changes that are imposed by ISO New England, our operator, because these do come up.
In other words, make sure the price is the price, and nothing can be added to it.
Make sure there is no exit fee if you leave before the term. We've seen offers where there's a $50 fee for residential customers, or in some cases with businesses, the termination fee will be based upon the estimated unused kilowatt hours that you would have had between the date you terminate the contract and what the contract end date was, times some factor. This can be a considerable amount of money. Even for a residential customer at $50, that would wipe out any of the potential savings by a multiples.
Right. No matter what, you're not going to have huge savings by shopping your electricity. There's a possibility you could save money, but you're not going to see tremendous savings. So you want to be really, really careful before you sign one of these.
And the reason for that, John, is we're all in the same marketplace.
Right. All buying from the same source, and it really, those that can buy the largest volumes are the ones that...
Or a timing issue.
Timing is absolutely...
It's like buying a stock.
It's like whether I filled up my gas tank on Tuesday when some of them have a discount that day, or whether I waited till Wednesday.
Exactly.
When did you do it? That can sometimes drive the price because it's commodity
and the other thing I think customers should be aware of is that sometimes when their contract ends, they are automatically just continued on with the supplier,
right.
And sometimes at a variable price, which changes month to month, which can be, especially like in the winter as we have now, January, February,
right.
March would be extremely high prices. So
there
are a lot of things that consumers should be aware of. They should read that contract. If they have something that they receive in the mail, they should review it. I'm always glad to review contracts for people. I've done this. It's something I do because I do believe in the competitive marketplace. And if you get something by phone, don't commit to it by impulse. Ask them to send you what their offer is in writing so you can, without that impulse and that pressure of that caller right then and there, you can review it at your leisure and really take a good look at it.
Right, because you can actually agree on the phone, can't you? You can make a commitment on the phone. So
that's
the advice is don't make the commitment on the phone.
Correct.
Ask them to send you a document so that you can scrutinize it. Because in the final analysis, the best you're going to do is save a few dollars a month. You could expose yourself to increased costs that could run into, well, let's just say $50 for an exit fee or worse. And we have seen situations where it's been worse. That's a good note to end it on. I think we've covered the ground pretty well. And I want to thank you both for coming in today.
Thank you, John.
Thanks.
You've been listening to Cape Light Compact Focus on Energy. Timely topics on energy matters of interest to the Cape Cod community. If you have any questions or topics you'd like us to address on future programs, you can email us at focus@capelightcompact.org, or you can call 1-800-797-6699 and let us know. You can also visit our website at capelightcompact.org. If you have any questions today on today's topics, power supply, you can call 1-800-381-9192. That's the number for the power supply. Again, 800-381-9192. I'd like to thank my guests, Joe Soares, Senior Power Supply Planner at the Cape Light Compact, and Sam Morgan, the Northeast Commodity Sales Manager for Con Ed Solutions, the Compact Supplier. I'd also like to thank our engineer, Maddie Dunn, the Station Operations Manager, for his good work in getting the program out to you today. Cape Light Compact Focus on Energy is broadcast from the historic schoolhouse in Provincetown, WOMR 92.1, and in Orleans, 91.3 on your FM dial. It's also streamed on the World Wide Web at www.womr.org. I'm your host, John Burns. Thank you very much for listening. Please join us again next month, same time, same stations, and remember, use energy wisely. It's a precious and increasingly scarce resource.